From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, John Hogue joins us. A dramatic time ahead. By the way, he had an amazing prediction on our program back in May of this year. He was spot on. We'll tell you about that later on. Ketia became the second named hurricane of the season in the Atlantic Ocean, but forecasters say it might be too soon to determine where it might head. The National Hurricane Center in Miami cautioned all of us, still recovering along parts of the East Coast from Irene, not to stress over the storm. It's warm waters, it's in a low wind shear environment, but those are two ingredients that could propel it to become a major hurricane, likely by this weekend. But it's too soon to tell if it will ever come near land. Maximum sustained winds right now, 75 miles an hour. President Barack Obama has declared a major disaster in North Carolina and the state of New York as cresting rivers and floodwaters threaten communities in the wake of the storm and Hurricane Irene. The president's move allows the two states to tap extra funds for relief efforts. And the National Park Service says engineers sealed up cracks in the Washington Monument from last week's earthquake ahead of Hurricane Irene. But now they have found water inside that might indicate more leaks, so they're going to have to try to fix that. Mitch Batras with us, earthchangesmedia.com. Hey, Mitch, how are you?
Well, doing all right, George. As well as one can be after surgery.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I'm glad you're fighting and you're back.
Yeah, I'm fighting and I'm back. I have a two-story house, so I had to make a bedroom downstairs and everything's kind of working out.
A little surgery on the tendon, huh?
It was nasty. Worse than I thought. I've been asked if I knew what I'd be going through, would I do it again? And the answer is yes, begrudgingly, because I want to walk.
Well, you have to. A friend of mine tore his tendon playing the racquetball, and it was sore for a long time. Anyways, Mitch, let me ask you about Ketia. What's happening here? What do we know? What's the latest?
Well, you covered it well. I think there's a little bit more concern about it than what you may have mentioned. It is already at 75 mile-per-hour sustained wind, so it is a Cat 1. And you're right, they don't know exactly where it's going to go, and I think they're trying to tap down the spookiness of it, one coming after another.
Yeah.
There is plenty of time. That's the good news. There's plenty of time. And I think they've really sharpened their skills on being able to follow it. Where they are lacking just a bit, and I can understand it, is the intensity. They had Irene right down to exactly where it was going to go. They were expecting it to be a little bit larger, a Cat 3 at least, maybe even a Cat 4, and it was smaller. However, the floods, the rain, and the surge that came with it, been pretty nasty. I'm real concerned about earthquakes still. I talked to you previously before, George, about what the Mayans had mentioned to me, especially in the last 10 days of August, which has really pretty much all come true, except I was expecting a megaquake. And today's the last day, so I will say that this, today is the window closes, that window of opportunity. However, as we both know, events can happen a few days after. And with all this water, tremendous amount of water inland up in New England area, that is what causes fluid displacement.
Oh, that's a good point, Mitch. That's pretty dangerous, too, indeed. Mitch's website, earthchangesmedia.com. Keep healing, Mitch. We'll get you back later. The next time you go to a hospital, remember this story. They might look quite clean, those white coats, uniforms, colorful surgical scrubs worn by doctors, nurses, orderlies, people who help, but they say they may harbor a host of nasty, potentially dangerous bacteria, according to a new study. More than 60% of health workers' uniforms sampled by researchers tested positive for pathogens, including the germs that can cause pneumonia, bloodstream infections, and drug-resistant infections such as MRSA. 25 of the 100 top-paid U.S. CEOs earned more last year than their companies paid in federal income tax. According to a study by a Washington think tank, At a time when lawmakers are facing tough choices in a quest to slash the national debt, the Institute for Policy Studies said that it found that many of the companies spent more on lobbying as well than they did on taxes as well. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, this is outrageous. They earned more than their companies paid in taxes.
Yes, it is. And the companies used the services of the government.
Unbelievable.
Clearly, when they paid that much to lobbyists. So, yeah, there is a very serious imbalance in who's using the services that government provides and who's paying for it. And, of course, it's getting worse, and that's one of the reasons the deficit is getting bad. But this is a global problem, George. But it's one that the government has not made an effort to address. You will see literally billions going to government contractors who are not paying taxes. You know, they're even booking it offshore, and the government's allowing it to happen.
Crazy. Stock market August, worst August in 10 years. I'm glad it's behind us, but what's in front of us?
We have a real head and shoulders pattern forming, and you know, this could go either way, George, but I'm very concerned about October and November. I think this could be very, very rocky, particularly if we have the federal budget needs to be accomplished by October 1st. And I think that could signal some bad news to the market because of the deficit problems. And so I think we're in for a very, very volatile period.
Okay, thank you. Catherine's website, Solari.com, part of our Twitter feed. The original recordings for the Beach Boys' legendary Lost album, Smile, are to be released this autumn, 44 years after it was first due to come out. The Smile sessions were recorded in 1966, but the album was left unfinished after the group's co-founder Brian Wilson suffered an emotional breakdown. It would have been the follow-up to the group's Pet Sounds, widely regarded as one of the greatest albums ever. In 2004, Brian Wilson re-recorded the album for a solo release, but the original sessions remained in the vaults. Road rage is an aggressive or angry behavior by a driver of an automobile or other motor vehicle. Such behavior might include rude gestures, verbal insults, deliberately driving in an unsafe or threatening manner, or making threats. Road rage can lead to altercations, assaults, collisions, which result in injuries, and even deaths. It can be thought of as an extreme case of aggressive driving. Listen to this case.
An Ohio man is recovering from injuries following a road rage incident at a gas station. 53-year-old Michael Anthony was attacked by a couple following a dispute on the Columbus roadway. A man and a woman can be seen on surveillance video leaving their vehicle and approaching Anthony. The man is thrown punching Anthony multiple times, eventually knocking him out. Police are still searching for the couple.
In a moment, we're going to talk with Dr. Peter Bragan. His book, Medication Madness, talking about some of the sources behind road rage on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Peter Bragan, Harvard-trained psychiatrist, former full-time consultant, also in private practice in Ithaca, New York. Dr. Bragan also acts as a medical expert in criminal malpractice and product liability legal cases, involved in landmark cases on behalf of patient rights in regard to antidepressants. We're going to talk about road rage with him, but with a different twist. Peter, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, Judge. Delighted to be talking to you.
My
delighted.
Pleasure. What a subject. Have you ever witnessed road rage yourself as you drive around?
Well, I witnessed this, and I just got back testifying in a trial that had an aspect of road rage where a man tried to run over his estranged wife with his car. So, I've even been in court on that kind of an issue.
I have seen it no matter where I drive, Peter, whether it's in St. Louis or Los Angeles or Detroit. Wherever I go, I see aspects of road rage, primarily instigated, not intentionally, by someone who probably isn't aware of how to drive well, or they're being too aggressive and they cut somebody off. But all of a sudden, when that person is disrupted, the person who's minding his or her own business, and that happens to them, they lose it. They chase the person. All kinds of things happen. Why do they do this? Why don't they just back off and let that person go away?
Well, there's two kinds of issues. One is the psychological, and one is the chemical, where the person's under the influence of a psychiatric drug or alcohol. Psychologically, George, I think the essence of the issue is shame. Some people walk around, drive around with a deep sense of They're going to be humiliated. They're going to be taken advantage of. They're going to be put down. It's usually something they've experienced for years. It makes them really, really angry. And then somebody who is really doing nothing but maybe forgetting to turn on their turn signal.
Right.
Triggers that sense of humiliation. You can't do this to me. You can't get away with this. George, almost all of violence that's spontaneous rather than, say, political or military, almost all violence comes out of somebody feeling humiliated, disrespected, put down by another person.
And they lose it, Peter. I mean, they will go after the person. I've seen fights. I've seen the rager, you know, tailgate the person. I mean, to the point where they were going to cause an accident and probably harm themselves and other people. Truly amazing. And I don't think it's getting any better. It seems to be getting worse.
Well, I think all the psychiatric drugs that people are taking, as well as street drugs and alcohol, but a lot of the psychiatric drugs cause disinhibition. Way back when Prozac first came out, back in the late 80s, I noticed right away, just from my own patients and then from talking with other docs, that people on Prozac were having a lot of road rage. And now all these new drugs, you know, Celexin, Paxil, Zoloft, all these so-called SSRIs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, they can stimulate a kind of agitation inside the person where they're really easily triggered into doing something that they ordinarily wouldn't do at all. And in those cases, you don't necessarily have somebody who's walking around with a lot of shame and humiliation is going to be triggered. You have somebody who's being churned up by the agitating effects of the drugs. I think a lot of road rage is due to the drugs. But, you know, you mentioned earlier on your show that the government isn't going to tell us the truth about this. And the government has been, the FDA has just dragged its feet on recognizing medication-induced violence. Mm-hmm. It has plenty of data on it. It's even done internal studies on it. But there's just a lot of data on violence from the antidepressants and also from the benzodiazepines, you know, the benzos, the tranquilizers like Xanax and that whole group, Cerax and Valium and the Klonopin.
So instead of trying to calm people down, they're making them more aggressive.
Very often, they just loosen inhibition. They cause what's called disinhibition. Xanax, it's even in the official label of a drug, the FDA label, but docs tend not to pay attention to it. And very often, the newspapers, I think because they're under the influence of the drug companies, they often don't report the facts of drugs being, of psychiatric prescription drugs being related to various kinds of rage, road rage, and also, you know, assaults on police officers, and just a lot of stuff in the military. A lot of the problems in the military
come from
our drugging of the soldiers.
And, you know, we see in some cases when they come back into society, some of them have killed their friends and family members and then committed suicide.
Yes, that's right. And I work closely with groups in the military. I testified before the Veterans Affairs Committee last year on violence and suicide in the military from the drugs. We're loading up our soldiers incredibly. We will give a few months' supply to soldiers going into combat of addictive stimulant drugs and addictive benzos. It's astonishing. And, of course, they don't get any supervision. If anybody even knows about it, their nearest supervisor is going to be a corporal or a buddy. It's just a very, very bad situation. The government has, you know, been covering that up, too.
Dr. Brigham, how serious a problem do you see, one, the medicating of America, and also this road rage problem?
Well, the road rage problem is always going to be a problem. I think it's a much bigger problem than that. I think it's rage in a lot of areas. You know, in medication madness, I've got 50 cases in depth, including crime scene visits by myself, of violence, crime, and suicide caused by the psychiatric drugs. And I mean really caused by it, because in all those cases, once the drugs were stopped, nobody ever, as far as I know, ever repeated. So I think we have a lot of violence in this country from the over-medicating. And, you know, the problem is vast in its scope. Latest study, we got 10% of our kids or more being diagnosed with ADHD, which means that one out of 10 kids, and I think it's now more than that, I'll bet it's one out of seven kids, is literally growing up, George, with his brain bathed in amphetamine drugs.
And I think the biggest problem is get them off sugar. That might help.
That might help, too. Exercise might help. Better teaching might help. You know, mom and dad getting on the same page and providing better, consistent love and discipline. But whenever we start drugging our kids, we blame them for our problems, for the family problems, the teacher's problems. We diagnose the kids. We don't diagnose the family or the school or the culture. We're really scapegoating our kids. I think that it's a form of child abuse, not by the parents, who are usually in the dark about what's happening. It's child abuse by my colleagues in psychiatry, the way we are diagnosing and drugging a huge portion of our children.
These psychiatric drugs, they're prescribed. How are they supposed to work?
Well, the usual nonsense that people are told is that they correct biochemical imbalances. But there are no known biochemical imbalances in the brains of most folks who go for help until they get to the psychiatrist or the pediatrician or the GP. Then they immediately get a biochemical imbalance with the first dose. And I believe that these drugs work by impairing brain function. I think it's a scientific fact that all psychoactive substances impair function. We don't have anything good enough to improve the brain we're given in the way of a psychoactive substance. And if a person gets emotions, get blunted when they're suffering a great deal, they may for a time feel better. At least they're not feeling so much pain. Or if they get an artificial high, which often happens just for a week or two from the antidepressant, they think, oh, my gosh, I'm really being helped by the antidepressant. But it's always a matter of actually having your brain less functional. And, you know, all of us probably at one time or another have wanted to have less functional brains to escape. And I really understand how people want that and seek that out. But I think that selling it en masse to the public as a solution is really, really a wrong thing to do.
In the U.S., more than 300 cases of road rage a year have ended with serious injury or death. There's 1,200 reported incidents a year, according to the AAA, and I think that's way, way lower than what it should be.
Oh, I'm sure it's massively greater than that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be interesting to know how many of them have psychiatric drugs?
That's right. That would be a great part of a study.
Yep. Very hard to get it because the drug companies will incredibly oppose that kind of research.
They say the cities with the most courteous drivers, Minneapolis, Nashville, St. Louis, Seattle, and Atlanta.
Yeah.
In some of the top-rated road rage capitals, New York, Dallas-Fort Worth, Detroit, Atlanta. And then they said also Minneapolis. I don't know, Minneapolis can also be some of the courteous, but so be it also. Some of the other problems are in Miami, Phoenix, L.A., Boston, as well as New York. So it's all over
City
the place.
Now, George, I want to make clear, that's New York City. That's not where I live.
That's right.
Ithaca, New York, and upstate New York.
Ithaca's calm. There's no road rage in Ithaca.
Yeah, we're much more peaceful in central New York.
Peter, your work, of course, Medication Madness, Talking Back to Prozac, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been doing that, not only as a psychiatrist, but as a writer?
Well, I actually got started in college. I volunteered at the State Mental Hospital at Harvard, and I wrote my first book, co-authored, came up with the idea and co-authored my first book. I saw, as a college student, that the psychiatrists in the state hospitals were doing more harm than good. I went into psychiatry to help people learn to do more good than harm because I knew that what people really needed when they're in trouble is human services. They need caring, informed, wise help. They don't need drugs and lobotomies and shock treatment. So from the beginning, I was going into the profession to try to to shed some light, because I could see clearly what was going on when I was younger. I hadn't been trained, George, so I could see clearly.
Well, we need more doctors like you. Peter, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls for Dr. Peter Bragan. And also, if you want to share your road rage story with us, we'll take your call as well on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, John Hogue joins us with his predictions. Get ready for that. And when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Peter Bragan, we're going to take your phone calls and also your road rage stories on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Bragan, do any of these antidepressant drugs work, in your opinion, or are they all bad?
I don't think they work. I'm happy to discuss that, too.
They just don't work. That's
no, I don't think they work. A meta-analysis don't show they work any better than a sugar pill. And they're far more dangerous.
Okay, let's take some calls. Let's go. First-time caller, James, truck driving in Arkansas. Boy, I bet you see all kinds of things out there, James.
Yes, I do. And I'm out here every day. I've been out here for 10 years driving truck. I see road rage all the time. And just wanted to mention something about, you know, the antidepressant drugs. You know, some people actually have to take these things, and I do myself. And I know a lot of other people that drive trucks that do, and Xanax, Celexa, you know, things like that. I take the Celexa, I take the Xanax, and it helps me to focus better. I'm calmer. I used to be a world-class jerk. And now that I'm actually on something like this, and I'm a better person. And you know, I actually have realized that, you know, when I see something like that, instead of, you know, getting involved myself, you're probably never going to see that person again. If somebody is driving dangerously, I ended up calling the state patrol and just letting them handle the situation,
yeah,
instead of getting involved myself.
And just back away. Peter, you want to react to that?
Well, it reminds me of something very important that I wanted to bring up. I don't know if you know, James, both the drugs you're on, it can be very risky to come off of them. So I don't want to encourage anybody, although I, you know, I'm not a positive fan of the drugs, even though I'm a psychiatrist. Both the antidepressant that you're on, all the antidepressants, the newer ones, and the Xanax, if you try to come off either one without good supervision, or if you do it too rapidly, you can get really serious withdrawal reactions. And the reason why you get withdrawal reactions from Celexa or Prozac or Zoloft or from Xanax or Klonopin is the drugs are changing the brain. They're changing your brain. And then when you stop the drug, your brain's been changed and it's been fighting the drug, and you can get a lot of abnormal reactions. So, you know, just be careful about the medications. I've seen a lot of problems with that drug combination. You know, talk to your physician about it. Think about it yourself. Read about it. Nowadays, it's usually not enough to just talk to your physician. Read about it independently.
Are there dose levels, Peter, that would work better than others?
Well, I think with all psychoactive substances, whether it's alcohol or marijuana or psychiatric drugs, the lower dose, the better. The
yeah.
less, the better, and probably none is better. But again, it's very risky. These drugs particularly cause problems, like the combination that he's on. I've seen a lot of problems with that combination. But they typically come when you raise the dose or lower the dose or try to stop.
The problems do.
When the brain is being changed rather rapidly is when most of these problems resolve.
Because at this point, they seem to be working for him at this
yes.
point.
Yes, and that's totally up to him to decide to continue them. But I think he should be informed about some of the dangers associated with them.
Do doctors generally prescribe lower dosages first, doctor, and then work their way up? What do they do?
Well, you're supposed to do that with any drug, is to try a lower dose first. And I think most physicians do that. But what they don't do is they don't realize that when they're mixing drugs, the doses can be vastly increased in their effect. See, when the FDA comes out and it says, okay, in the drug label, in the drug information sheet, it says, you know, you can take, say, 50 milligrams of Zoloft or 100 milligrams of Zoloft, or it says the maximum is a certain amount. Well, what doctors often do is they say, okay, I'm giving the maximum of Zoloft, now I'll give the maximum of Xanax. But that's not how the maximum for Zoloft was found. It wasn't found in combination with Xanax.
Right. It was found by itself.
By itself.
Yeah,
so often people are on cocktails of drugs nowadays. I mean, four, five, I'm seeing 18, 17, 16-year-olds on a combination of four or five drugs, all given to the max, and the doctor thinks he's doing fine.
Why does he do this?
Well, the drug companies have sold this country a bunch of malarkey about the safety and efficacy of psychiatric drugs. And now the average practitioner, whether he's a family doctor or a psychiatrist, doesn't know how to do anything else. What a family doctor really should do is work with a social worker therapist or a counselor therapist or psychologist therapist.
Right.
So that he can send patients who would be helped with some grief or help with some rage, to people who can really help them. But instead, it's like they've got one tool, it's the drugs, and everybody gets hit on the head with it. It's a very bad situation on drugs. Psychiatrists don't even know how to do therapy anymore because they can't financially compete with the therapists like the social workers and the psychologists and the counselors who are going to charge less and do a better job. So my colleagues don't even do anything but maybe see four, five, six patients an hour and medicate them by and large. I mean, that's generally the case. That's very sad. Very tragic. It's a very bad delivery of service to people who could be helped by really informed individual therapy or family therapy or referral to AA. Or
at least first before you prescribe drugs to them.
Well, yes. And in general, the psychological services are better. If you look at when a drug's approved, you'll be interested in this, how this works, because it's about government malarkey again.
Yeah.
To get Prozac approved, Eli Lilly just had to show two studies that showed some sort of marginal effectiveness.
And they were their studies, right?
Their studies, managed by them, and they even cheated on the studies because the patients were getting so overstimulated by Prozac that just as James, who called in, they started giving sedative tranquilizers, which was not part of the rules, along with it. The FDA still approved it. Now, meanwhile, there could be several other studies which were negative, and the FDA doesn't care. So it's cherry-picking, carefully tailored studies that gets drugs approved. But if you do what's called a meta-analysis, and you look at, and this has been done, this is in my books, if you look at a meta-analysis of all the studies sent to the FDA for antidepressants, they're no better than placebo and far more dangerous.
All right, let's go to Jim in St. Louis, Missouri. Jim, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
It occurred to me, I was listening to, hello, doctor.
Hi.
There was a movie on TV, the first Road Rage movie that I had ever seen. I still like it. And I don't know if you folks, you might be old enough, George, I don't know.
I probably am.
There was a movie called Duel with Dennis Weaver.
Uh-huh.
And
I remember
there was that's an icon of a road rage movie of this fellow.
Is that the one where the truck is following him downhill for miles and miles?
Oh, yeah, they're in the desert. All he did was pass this guy. Throughout the entire movie, you never did get to see the truck driver's face.
Yeah, you saw his boots. I remember this movie.
He did see the boots. But ultimately, the truck driver driving this hopped-up 18-wheeler, it looked like a piece of junk, but evidently he had a heck of an engine in it, and the guy did ultimately, he did die. But that was that's just kind of a movie. I just thought I'd touch on that. But as far as a real circumstance, here's a road rage thing. This happened to my mom. At one time, you'd have railroad crossings. They didn't have the arms that came down. At this time, they didn't. And this fella, there was a train going by, and one of these cities that I live by, lots of trains. And she was sitting there waiting. She was the first one right by the train. This guy comes up and starts bumping her car.
Oh, pushing her onto the track?
Yeah, trying to move her into the train. And she's got her brakes on. So anyway, the guy gets out, and she had a bumper sticker that he didn't like on her car.
Oh, yeah, regardless of what it said.
Regardless of what it said. And this guy was really PO'd because of this bumper sticker. And she didn't know. I mean, you know, my mom's, she's 80 years old right now. Back, I think that was probably, you know, about 10 years ago. And, you know, she came home. She was just, I mean, she was white-faced.
Oh,
she didn't know what to think.
Shaking, no doubt.
Oh, well, you know, this train is just going by. And, you know, I thought, boy, I'm glad I wasn't in that car because I was going to throw a road rage right back at
you. Tell me, this, we're talking murder here, almost.
This guy's nuts. He was nutty. You know, there had to be something wrong with this guy. And I do think that these people are, it's not just the drugs. I tell you what exacerbates the problem. When they go to a bar and they drink and they're on the
and
drugs.
They drink. Well, now, let me ask you, doctor, about that. That combination, drinking and drugs. And thanks for the call, Jim.
Well, you're just messing your brain up more and more, whether you're combining psychiatric drugs or psychiatric drugs and alcohol or street drugs and alcohol. And, you know, we need our higher mental functions. We need our cortex, you know. We need our frontal lobes to be working. It's hard being a human being, very, very hard. And if you impair yourself, it's unpredictable. Your judgment gets impaired. And one of the things about it is that you don't know how impaired you are. I call it spellbinding. And in the case of psychiatric drugs, medication, spellbinding. People on psychoactive substances rarely appreciate the degree to which their mental functions may be compromised, their memory, their judgment, their alertness. And we all know, you know, that drunks think they can drive perfectly well or better than ever. Judgment's impaired. So a lot of problems with driving. The combination that the truck driver was describing that he took and his friends took, you couldn't, we wouldn't be allowed to fly an airplane with that. You know, I was a consultant to the FAA about, you know, why pilots shouldn't be allowed to use antidepressants. And until recently, the FAA has been reconsidering that, which is a shame. It's drug company influence again. But, you know, the truck drivers probably should follow the same rules that airline pilots follow.
Well, talking about truck drivers, let's go to David driving in Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good.
How you doing, Doc?
Good, David. Hi.
My wife is on that pill Xanax. She went to our regular family doctor because she had a cold. Well, she had a bad day because she got into it with my son. You know, my son's 20 and he's in college, and they got into it. So the doctor asked what was wrong with her. She just said, oh, I'm having a bad day. Me and my son got in. So he prescribed her Xanax.
Oh, just like that?
Just like that. He gave her a prescription for 60 number 10 Xanax. He kept her on them pills for like 6 months. And then he just told her he couldn't prescribe her none no more. And I had road rage in my kitchen. When I came off the road and came home, we couldn't even have a conversation because she was just freaked out. Well, she ended up having to go to a psychiatrist, and they put her back on Xanax. And I was just curious how you could get somebody off of that without them freaking out on you.
Well, I have a chapter on how to come off psychiatric drugs in all my recent books, because it's so important, including Medication Madness. First of all, Xanax should never be given like that. I don't think Xanax should be given to anybody. It's a very high-potency, short-acting, big-punch drug. It can cause addiction, that is tolerance, and an inability to get off the drug within days and weeks of exposure.
Was it created for some disorder?
Yes, yes. They made up a new disorder, now called panic disorder, in order to give Xanax its own special niche. I was involved in a legal case where I'm reading through the internal documents at Upjohn, and they're complaining that some other company is trying to get a drug approved for panic disorder. They're saying, that's our disorder. We created that.
We got to get you back for another program, Peter, to talk about panic attacks, because that whole area fascinates me.
Well, yes, and
we'll do that later.
Worsens them.
This you know, a lot of kids are taking Xanax now. Yeah. I don't know how they're getting it, but they're selling them in schools nationwide by the pill.
Yes, it's all over the place. And, you know, the Xanax, the whole approval of Xanax was faked because the company used the data at 6 weeks, and at 8 weeks, the patients were worse.
Well, now, so in David's case, he'd like to get his wife off the stuff. But slow. What does he do?
Well, try to find a physician who understands it. Maybe take a chapter out of Medication Madness or out of my book, Your Drug May Be Your Problem. Let the physician learn a little bit about the withdrawal from drugs and taper slowly and follow some of the instructions in my books, but try to work with a physician and maybe a therapist, because coming off Xanax causes a lot of anxiety. It's a terrible thing, coming off Xanax. But staying on it for years, people start losing their memory. They start losing their mental faculties if the years and years on Xanax. So it's a good idea to come off, but it can be very difficult. It has to be done very, very gradually at the patient's ability to stand it.
Good point.
You don't want to push anybody.
Good point. Carl, truck driving in Missouri. Lots of truck drivers tonight. Go ahead, Carl.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Great, Carl.
Hey, I wanted to relate an incident that happened to me several years ago. I was traveling in a little truck that I own, a pickup truck, and I stopped to get fuel at a convenience store, and this guy came sipping between where I parked. I parked between the store itself and the pump, and just as I was getting out, this guy in a Camaro comes sweeping by there, and just almost hit me, George. Just almost hit me.
Yeah.
Pull that thing down, you know? And he had his window down. I know he heard me. And I went on over to the other side of the truck, and I started pumping the fuel. Well, this guy got out of his car, and he started rummaging around in the back seat floorboard, you know, and he's over there for like a minute. And he gets out with this tire iron and starts walking towards me.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there pumping my fuel, right? Well, back then, I used to smoke cigarettes, but back then I had a big lighter in my pocket. And I pulled out the fuel nozzle, and I pointed at him, and I flicked that big lighter, and I said, "Are you really that stupid?" And he stopped dead in his tracks, George. He turned around and went, got back in his car, put the tire in there, and didn't even go in the store. He drove off.
That was the smartest thing he ever did, to go away.
Yeah. I don't even know where I got the forethought to do that.
Well, you know, one of the concerns, and thank God it's not happening yet, Peter, but I'm a concealed weapons holder, and a lot of people are, and I'm licensed in 36 states, maybe even more now. It begins to grow, but I haven't heard of any specific cases nationwide yet where a road rager was a concealed weapon holder, a legal one, and pulled a gun on somebody. But you know what? I got to tell you, if I was putting gas in my car and somebody was walking up to me with a tire iron and I was carrying that day, I'd pull my gun out on him. I mean, you'd have every right to do that. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, at least to warn him off. And
yeah, I mean, I don't want to shoot the guy, but,
yeah,
you know, maybe enough to get him to
but
back
off.
But,
you know, people who have legitimate carry licenses are not the ones going around shooting people.
No, they're not. They're not. You're absolutely right. We're almost out of time, Peter. We're going to talk again. I want to talk about panic attacks on a future day. What's your website, Peter?
It's Breggin.com. Real simple. Breggin.com. Breggin.com.
Great. Thanks, Dr. Peter Breggin, and his latest book, Medication Madness. In a moment, Dr. John Hogue joins us. We're going to talk about some predictions for the next several hours, plus some of your phone calls with him at the end of the show. So we shall be right back on Coast to Coast AM.